You're listening to the WTA Insider Podcast. Ready? Play.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the WTA Insider Podcast. I'm Courtney Nguyen, senior writer for WTA Insider at WTATennis.com, and I'll be your host on this podcast, where we take you closer to the players and all the action on the WTA Tour. Well, on this episode, I am joined by managing editor of Sport360.com, Reem Aboulil, to preview the women's final at Roland Garros. We are sitting here in the press seats of Court Philippe Chatrier. There are people walking around, cleaning up after a very long day. Two three-set matches, two dramatic matches, two amazing contrasts of styles. And as the music serenades us, we're going to plow right on through, because that is exactly what Yelena Ostapenko and Simona Halep did today to book their spot into Saturday's Roland Garros final. Are you impressed by my segue abilities?
I love that it's Justin Bieber saying, is it too late now to say sorry? And I'm pretty sure that's like Ostapenko saying, I'm sorry I hit 50 winners past you today to me.
My bad. What can you do? But yes, let's start with Yelena Ostapenko, because she is going to be the big story going into Saturday insofar as people don't really know her. Now, those of us who obviously follow the tour, as you do, Reem, we've been aware of her talent. Big ball striker, former junior Wimbledon champion, very erratic. We know this as well on tour. She is a player who can smack 50 winners. She is also a player who today smacked 50 unforced errors, I believe. So, and you never know when those errors or winners will come. What has been so impressive to me about Yelena Ostapenko's run, again, unseeded, 20 years old, was 19 as of yesterday, 20 years old today, from Latvia, the first Latvian player to make a final of a major. So that's pretty amazing. But what has always really struck me about Ostapenko whenever I would try to gauge her is, can she do it day in and day out? She is 0-3, I believe, in finals on the WTA Tour. If she were to win on Saturday, she's the first, that'd be her first title, which is nuts. She lost in the final of Quebec City. She lost in the final of Charleston earlier this year. Last year, she lost in the final in Doha. So you've gotten a front row seat at the Yelena Ostapenko show. Reem, people are asking, who the heck is this kid? How could she possibly hit these winners? I mean, what do you say to that?
I think the most fascinating part is, she's done it at a slam when she lost in the first round of every slam last year. That's the most fascinating part. She made the third round in Australia this year, and that was the farthest she had ever gone. The most fascinating part of it all as well is that clay is not her best surface by any means, and that's actually what her coach Annabel Medina said, in that she's not surprised she's in the finals of slam, but she is surprised it came on clay. I think that Ostapenko is very funny in her own quirky way. I think that a lot of her personality is actually reflected on the court, which is not always the case with other players. Someone, for example, like Karolina Pliskova, she has the poker face, but then when you're interviewing her, she's so honest and she's so quirky and funny and cool. But with Ostapenko, she's kind of exactly how she is on the court, okay? You can see her facial expressions and really feel her emotions. She's a very emotional person, her coach today, Annabel, told us that she describes her as hyperactive, which makes perfect sense. Quite an apt description. And also, she's going for it. So far, I felt like she had all this power that was not harnessed in a way. And I feel that's what's happening this tournament. And I feel that that's what Medina was telling us she was working with her on. She's like, I cannot touch her game because her game is amazing. And that kind of power is what you need in today's game. But she needed to be a bit more organized and make better decisions. And that's what she's been doing. And to think that she's won 6 matches in this French Open for me, and the people that she had to fight against, she fought hard. It was not an easy ride by any means. Timea kept pegging her back. Yeah. And she's a very cool girl. She loves to ballroom dance, which she still does for fun. She used to do it competitively when she was younger. She still does for fun. Annabelle was saying she actually watched her in Riga. Mm. She was there for 5-6 days recently, and she watched her in Riga at a ballroom dancing class. She says it's her outlet. It's how she enjoys it. It's how she has fun. She's a very cool girl, and I'm happy that people are starting to see it.
I agree with you. Yelena Ostapenko is Yelena Ostapenko. I think that's really what it is. She's quite transparent in almost in everything that she does. And, you know, the way that she is off court, I mean, she gave a hilarious press conference after winning the quarterfinals, beating Caroline Wozniacki. And again, packed press room. Everybody wants to see what this kid's about. You know, she hit something like 40-something winners past Wozniacki. She hit another about 28 winners in the press conference in terms of just reared back and went. And Ostapenko, this reminds me a little bit when you brought up the ballroom dancing. She just operates in her own world. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the big things that kind of confuses people, even her fellow players on the tour, in terms of what is this kid about. She kind of does her own thing. She's really not part of the kind of social sphere of the tour, like earlier this week with Kristina Mladenovic and some of those players who are pretty social and they're all part of it. Ostapenko's pretty on her own. For a long time had been coached by her mother and was traveling almost exclusively with her mother. Now I found out this from one of my radio commentators because I've been doing radio Roland Garros while I've been here, and he said that actually her mother had been banned from coming on site on her match days until today. That she had to watch all those matches from home, that Ostapenko wanted to just focus, she just wanted Medina Garrigues there. I thought that was quite a mature decision for a youngster to make, to kind of own that. But let's talk about this partnership between Ostapenko and Annabel Medina Garrigues. Annabel Medina Garrigues, who hasn't played a singles match in a few years, hasn't played a doubles match since last year, I believe, was dealing with a shoulder injury. And they share an agent, I believe. Is that how that kind of got set up? And started working kind of together in the off season, and Yelena really liked her, really wanted her to coach her, and Annabel's like, hold on, I'm still playing, I'm not out of it yet. But when Garrigues kind of picked up this shoulder injury and Grace basically couldn't play, she's been working a little bit more with Yelena, and Annabel, a great clay court player, Spanish, the whole stereotype. But that is what you said is exactly what I've been so impressed with Yelena Ostapenko this fortnight is. She's playing tennis. Mm-hmm. One, I can watch and go out to the juniors right now and see kids hit a ball. Mm-hmm. Power is not necessarily in and of itself going to do anything. We see that with a lot of players who have great power who've never really been able to get traction inside the top 50. But Ostapenko's playing tennis now. She's making the right decisions. She's using more spin when she needs it. She's staying in rallies. And she's competing, which is something that I can't say that before these 2 weeks I necessarily thought of with respect to Yelena Ostapenko. But she's competing incredibly well, really fighting, as you said. And you look at the players that she's beat. She's beat Sam Stosur, who is one of the top 10 in our clay court power rankings. She beat Caroline Wozniacki, who had been having a great tournament. She beats another clay court specialist in Tomeya Bachinski today. She has an opportunity to beat the clay court specialist in Simona Halep on Saturday. I mean, the stars seem to be aligning. We're looking under a full moon as we speak here on Chatrier. I mean, it's pretty, I know, it's just you and me, Rin. But I don't know. It's kind of a crazy romantic ideal of what she's doing, especially in a sport that has always craved young talent, and maybe the story over the last few years has actually been older talent. She's got a shot here. No doubt about it.
I think we'd all be crazy if we don't consider her as having any chances, because every time, even in the semifinals, everyone was like, Tomeya has been in that stage before. No, we'd be wrong if we just think Simona. Yes, Simona on paper is the favorite, and yes, Simona for more than a paper is a favorite. But by all means, I am yet to see Ostapenko crumble under the pressure. I asked Medina today, Annabel, the fact that she's the first ever Latvian person, man or woman, to be in a final, are these kind of historic or history-making feats kind of putting any pressure on her? She's like, no, she's not thinking about it. This girl's just thinking about the matches and thinking about the wins and thinking about doing the right thing. She's really not too fussed about what comes around it. You can even see it in her press conference. She's not in awe of the fact that, oh, I'm 20 years old and I'm young and no one this young, it's been 10 years since someone this young has been in the final here in Roland Garros. She's not thinking like that, which is amazing. I guess maybe it's the youth, because one of the things is being this young, maybe you don't overthink things. Yeah. Which I think is kind of amazing, and it's working for her. And I think she really has nothing to lose. You know how players always say that? Yeah, it sounds ridiculous when you say, no, you can lose the final of a Grand Slam. But in her mind, one of the most amazing things that I found out from Annabelle was during the rain delays in her quarterfinal, there were so many rain delays against Wozniacki, right? There were three, maybe, I think, two or three at least. So she said that during one of them, she looked at Annabelle and was like, listen, I'm 19 years old. I'm going to have so many Roland Garros ahead of me. I'm just going to go out and be free. And that's free is exactly how she's been playing. And I think that is amazing. And like you said, I feel like tactically she's becoming, when you're this young, I feel that you can absorb so much. You're like a sponge, you know? When you're this young, and she's been with her mother all this time, and having Annabelle now is such a new perspective, which is great. She did it at a perfect time, you know? And also at a time when maybe she wasn't expecting too much of herself before the French, so, you know, let's do it. And it just worked out perfectly. And because she's like a sponge now, the smallest things that she's getting from Annabelle, she's able to put it on the court, and that's one of the things Annabelle said. She's like, I love the fact that what I tell her, she takes it in, and she does it. And that's all you need from anybody.
Exactly. I mean, that's a perfect pupil, and I think you're right. I think that those two have struck some kind of gold in that partnership, because it sounds like Yelena respects Annabelle a lot. So when you respect, and we'll get to this when we talk about Simona Halep and Darren Cahill, but when you respect your coach in a sport like tennis, where, again, the player is the boss, you have a 19-year-old who can fire you as a coach, you know? And because of that, it can temper some of that relationship, because at the end of the day, I don't have to listen to you. I'm your boss, you know? But in this situation, because the respect is there, it's a proper, non-dysfunctional, you know, coach-player relationship, and it's working. But Reem, I know you had a stat that was on about winners, about Yelena Ostapenko, that was circulating social media today. It's absurd. Basically, through six matches, Yelena Ostapenko has hit more winners by a fair, far margin than any of the men that are in the semifinalists. And to be fair, they've played five matches. They haven't played six, but they've also played best of five. So when you look in sets, they've played pretty similar number of sets. Yeah. But Ostapenko has outgunned them. Another interesting stat that popped up today, thanks to television, is that average forehand speed at this tournament, Yelena Ostapenko is ahead of Andy Murray. She's behind Dominic Thiem. She's behind Rafa Nadal. She's behind Stan Wawrinka. But she is hitting a forehand on average harder than Andy Murray, which, I mean, let's go. I mean, credit to Yelena Ostapenko. Also, what's going on, Andy Murray? But that's not the subject of our podcast. We're more concerned with Yelena. She is just firepower. And it's pretty cool.
Pretty cool. You know what? It reminds me a bit of Petra Kvitova.
Yes.
You know when you gasp when Petra is in the zone and hitting these forehands and going on her way to win Wimbledon titles? I haven't felt that in a long time, and I feel it sometimes when Madison Keys is in the zone, but unfortunately Madison has been injured. But I felt that way when she was making her way to the semis of Australian Open. And now seeing it, especially the center court, I think we keep saying clay, but this entire 2 weeks, everyone has been saying this. Yeah, Philippe Chatrier is a fast clay court. It's faster than Langlen, even. So it's suiting her, and it's just amazing to watch. You gasp. Sometimes you're like,
oh, absolutely. Whoa. Yeah, no, the crowd has been gasping. I mean, today during the three-setter, I mean, a grueling and a tough one, and Ostapenko was able to kind of get it over the line at the end and really just gun for her shots. She left Tomea Baczynski just kind of scratching her head in the press conference, and Baczynski kind of basically was telling us, like, look, you know, on match point, she goes and she hits it. I had a good wide serve. She hits this forehand. It barely skims the net. It lands in the corner. No one goes for this shot. Absolutely no one. She does. I'm curious to know if at 28 she's still able to go for that shot, was the joke that Tomea was making in terms of, like, you know, Baczynski really thought that Ostapenko was going to get nervous, and she was banking a little bit in terms of her game plan of really preying on that. Never happened with Ostapenko. Got a little nervous in the second set and dropped that one and then went into a third, but then just started swinging freely. But yeah, so that's Yelena Ostapenko. She's into the final. As Reem said, youngest finalist here at Roland Garros since a woman who was on this court as well today for very different reasons, Anna Ivanovic. Anna Ivanovic, who made the final here in 2007, lost that final to Justine Henin, but came back the next year, won it, beating Dinara Safina to make number one as well. Yeah, and if you haven't had a chance, I did a Facebook Live interview with Anna. We'll post that eventually as a podcast as well. But if you go to our Facebook page, the WTA Facebook page, you can take a look at that. She is a class act, and it was lovely to see her on the red clay here on Chatrier, though through very different circumstances. But Let's turn now to the favorite. Karolina Pliskova, the vanquished Karolina Pliskova, who had a stunning run to the semifinals, an almost comedic run, I think Karolina would say, to the semifinals. She never believed that that would necessarily be in the cards. She said that today, look, she was playing for number one. If she won today, she would have been number one going into the final, overtaking Angelique Kerber on Monday. And she said, look, after the first round, I was celebrating. So if you tell me that I can walk away from this tournament with 700 points, I would take it in a heartbeat. Like, I'm not worried about this at all. But Simona Halep plays a great match, has played a fantastic tournament, came back from the brink somehow against Alina Svitolina in her quarterfinal, down a set and 1-5, and comes back and beats Svitolina, bageling her in the final set. And now is playing. And my big takeaway from Simona Halep's win today against Pliskova, which was great. She hit 14 winners, 14 unforced errors, which she didn't give Pliskova anything, and it drove Karolina absolutely nuts. But my big takeaway is Simona Halep is here to win this title. You know, after match point, quiet fist pump. You wouldn't know that this was semifinal of a major. Walks to the net, applaud, big smile, though. I mean, she's definitely allowing herself to feel it. Comes into the press conference, everybody's like, oh, you must be so excited. She's like, yeah, I'm all right. But constantly, through little phrases that she would use, she was telling you, I'm not done. I am here to win the title. But she also said something that I'll get to later. But continue with what you were saying. I just wanted to give context to the press conference.
Exactly. In every answer, she would manage to give these hints or even say it even more clearly. Oh, I'm not done. I'm not celebrating. I'm happy. I deserve to be happy because I've done well. So she is patting herself on the back just a little bit. But at the same time, she's like, oh, I'm not done. I'm not done. She would cut us off mid-sentence. So I would be like, have you spoken to Virginia Rizzucci about her winning here? But nope. Let's move on to something else. Have you allowed yourself to think about walking away as number one and with a title? Nope. She knows. She's not. It's not like she's not talking about it. You know how Serena sometimes bans certain things? No. She said, I can talk about it if, when you ask me about possibly being number one. I'm fighting for two things, not one thing. But then, let's move on. She's not celebrating. And she's giving her, she's also giving off this such a confident vibe about, I've been here before. I know what I need to do. I know. It's not, this is not the first time I'm here. And when I asked her, what did you learn from the 2014 final? She said, oh, no, it's not just from that. And then she listed every single time she's made it deep at a slam and what she's learned from that. So I just love the confidence, and I love how she's super focused. We're not celebrating, which is amazing, and it's key, because I remember a couple of years ago when Novak Djokovic beat Rafa in the quarterfinals. His entire family were having champagne down in the restaurant. And I was thinking, guys, it's still the quarters. And then when he beat Andy over 2 days, they were celebrating again, which, yes, you can celebrate, but not champagne and this big, because then he lost to Stan. And it was the worst heartbreak of his life. So I love how focused she is, and you got to give it up to DC, man.
DC, Darren Cahill, the Simona whisperer, as it was, the Halep whisperer. But when I think back to those deep runs that she's made at Slams, right, the one that stands out to me, and it stands out to many people because it was her best chance up until Saturday to win a major, was when she beat Victoria Azarenka in the quarterfinals of the U.S. Open. I believe that was the quarterfinals, right? And if you guys go back and you look at how she reacted on match point, and it was a tough match. There was a rain delay. She had to come back from a breakdown. It was an incredibly tense, very high-quality match. But she celebrated. Like, she was whooping and fist-pumping, and it was. And then what happened in the semifinal against Panetta? Complete flop. Barely showed up. And then she would have, well, there are many debates as to whether or not if Simona Halep wins that match, if Serena Williams loses to Vinci, because there's one theory that is that Serena knew with the Grand Slam on the line that she was only going to have to go through Panetta, and so she kind of got a bit psyched out when she played Vinci. But if those results would have held, Halep would have played Vinci for the U.S. Open title. Mm-hmm. That always stood out to me. So when I watched her all week, has never reacted. Yeah. That comeback against Svitolina. Match point, fist pump, moves on. Darren Cahill, you look over at Cahill, he's just standing in the box. He's not even applauding. Mm-hmm. They have this business-like approach to this. And today, tough match against Karolina Pliskova. I thought Pliskova played really well, honestly, way better than I thought that she would. Halep's movement, impeccable, made Pliskova hit extra ball, extra ball, extra ball. And even the nerveless, poker-faced, always calm, never gets nervous, Karolina Pliskova admitted, like, when she runs those balls down, then when you get that forehand, when you get that shot to hit, you get nervous because you know it might come back. And she hit a key forehand long to give Halep the break to 5-3, and then Halep served it out in the final set. So, you know, it's in their head. And, I mean, Karolina Pliskova, after that press conference, I'm convinced that she's the president of the Simona Halep fan club. Yeah. I mean, she was... I mean, she went from being like Simona Halep at the beginning of the press conference of Simona Halep's really good on clay to she's the best on clay. I would bet everything that I have on her.
I bet everything I have that Simona's going to win. That was amazing.
So it's nuts. And so when we talk about these changes that Simona's made, it's really impressive. And I think that, but though for me, the biggest takeaway that I take away, I never understand how to use those two words. The thing that I take away from her press conference is what she said towards the end. And she said that, look, Ostapenko is going to go out there. She has nothing to lose. It's her first slam final. She's so young. And she's right. She doesn't have anything to lose. But, Halep said, I kind of feel the same way. And normally when players say that, especially top players, everybody in the press room rolls our eyes. We know it. We don't believe it. We genuinely don't believe in this idea of nothing to lose, as you said. Mm-hmm. But Halep then went on to explain. And she said, if I don't win on Saturday, it's okay. I have a long career ahead of me. And these opportunities will come again. And so I don't see this, basically, I'm paraphrasing and kind of extrapolating, but I don't think that, so Halep is saying, I don't see this as I have to do it. I see it as here's another opportunity, and it's a big opportunity, and I know that. It's an opportunity for number one. It's an opportunity for my first slam. It's an opportunity to win the tournament that I love. Mm-hmm. It's an opportunity to make history, to be right up there next to Ruzici, to finally give to my coach back. Mm-hmm. A reward for his belief and his hard work in me. So there's a lot on the line, and she's not running away from that, like you said, like not unlike some other players. But she's also saying, this ain't my last Roland Garros final. So whatever happens, happens, but I'll be back.
That was the best part of it all. I totally agree, because when she doesn't see it as a do or die situation, that's all you need. And Simona's young. Simona, the thing with Simona is because she got injured a lot, so every time you think, oh, it's going to happen, and then she gets injured, it makes it feel like it's been a longer journey than it really is. We forget how quickly things happened for her in 2014. We forget that insane stretch of just winning every final she ever played. You know, I think when she entered that Roland Garros final, she had literally won every final she had ever played.
Nearly. Madrid, she lost to Sharapova a few weeks before. But
and that was, yeah. So it was like, it happened so fast for her, and that's only been 3 years ago. So I love that. I love the fact that she's thinking, you know, what is gonna happen, you know? And she even joked when I mentioned Ruzici, because she's like, yep, I want to beat her. You know, just she's being light about it,
business while being
business-like as well. It's so weird. It's the weirdest combination where, oh, I can joke about it, but I'm here to win. And I love this combination. I love it that if you actually look at her entire clay season, Simona has delivered above and beyond. I mean, when after Madrid, and then she goes and makes it all the way to the final, you don't always expect that. That's a lot of hard work. That's a lot of matches to win. And then also she mentioned today a little bit the ankle, and she said, I do feel pain, but I don't care. She's just blocking any obstacle in her way. And when she said the MRI that she had before the tournament, when they were telling her basically, you're broken, and she was like, I didn't really understand what was going on. She's like, I refused. Mm-hmm. And I love that word from her. She was like, I refused to think that this is going to ruin my French Open. And it's showing.
It's showing, and it's a huge credit to Darren Cahill. Obviously, it's a story that's been, you know, driven into the ground at this point. As Simona told me for the first time in Madrid to WTA Insider, that Darren had decided to split with her after the Miami meltdown, and it really shocked her, and it really forced her to change her attitude. And I like what she said earlier this week. She said, you know, Darren, when he said it, he said, look, I don't have any problem with your game. I don't have any problem with your work ethic. You work hard. You're a nice person. Like, I like you, but, like, this attitude has got to go. And the fact that she's been able, especially someone like Simona, the way that she's hardwired, to be able to make this adjustment, because she is an intrinsically intense person. She said this earlier this week about being Romanian, that she was like, Romanians, we are intense because of the blood. Me, even more so. Like, she knows that she's, like, on even more. But Somehow she's making the change, and so it's impressive. So X's and O's. What do you think, Reem? I mean, I'm not asking for predictions because we don't do predictions on this podcast because I don't put my people into that position. But what do you expect to see on Saturday? And what are the keys for you?
Obviously, I'm going to say the obvious, but the start is going to be very important. If anything, I think maybe Simona needs the better start, because with Ostapenko, maybe she'll give herself some leeway in thinking, it's the first time on this stage, it's okay, I've actually fought back all 2 weeks. So maybe if Ostapenko falls behind in the beginning, she can maybe tell herself, oh, okay, I can bounce back. I'm not saying Simona's not a fighter. She's a huge fighter. But it's just, I feel that it would help Simona. It would be more important maybe for Simona to step on the court and be like, from the very start, I am here. I'm not making mistakes. I'm running. And I think, because I know that Simona says it a lot when she plays these powerful players, which Pliskova is, so that's great practice for her, but she's never played Ostapenko before, and I wonder how it's going to be like when she sees that forehand coming her way for the first time. I think it's going to be interesting. I honestly cannot pick a winner. I just feel that things are really, 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 the stars are aligning for Simona. That's just the feeling that I have. When I keep looking at her wins, and for me, I'm still amazed by the Elina match. I'm still there. I mean, I really am still stuck there.
Simona would tell you to move on.
I just still can't believe that she saved a match point without knowing. She came back like that. And her path has been hard, man. Like, she's played Kasatkina, Elina, Pliskova. These are not easy players to beat. So I feel like really stars are aligning for Simona. I think it would be amazing getting the number one and a title at the same time. It's just great. I'm not saying she will win, but yeah, I don't know. What do you think is going to happen?
I genuinely don't know, because I think that Ostapenko just, you know, we mentioned Petra Kvitova earlier today, and I've been describing as a shorthand, and there are many other differences, but just in shorthand to people who need a crib sheet on Ostapenko, I've described her as right-handed Kvitova. She finds some odd angles that most right-handers can't find, and she goes for audacious shots, and when she's on, she's a world beater, and those are all things that we would use to describe Kvitova. One thing that I do think goes in Simona Halep's favor, she has a great record against Madison Keys. Mm. She has a great record now against Pliskova. She's only lost once to Pliskova. I feel like she maybe has never lost to Keys. I almost believe that that's the stat, but it's an overwhelming favorable head-to-head for Halep. Mm. Hitters don't scare her. She knows how to play that match. I think that Keys is a bigger hitter than Ostapenko, honestly. Mm-hmm. So I think that there's a little bit of that. But they're two different balls. I think that Ostapenko finds angles and has a little bit more audacity to go up the line and is maybe a little bit better on both sides. But her backhand is also very, very good. But I think that the second serve is going to be key for Simona and Ostapenko. Ostapenko's second serve is very attackable. Mm-hmm. Very attackable. And so one thing that Pliskova said, I tweeted this, but she is low-key my favorite tennis analyst currently in the game, because she breaks down technique and tactics really well. But when she was saying why she thought that Simona would win this match, she said, the thing is, Simona is not Tamea. And Simona can actually be aggressive. And so it's not just about having somebody who runs around and forces you to hit the ball. I think that Ostapenko has proven in this tournament that she can beat that person, because she beat Wozniacki, who does it and gives her a ball to hit, but runs down a lot of balls. And she obviously beat Baczynski, who does a little bit of the same with a little bit more variety. Halep doesn't have the variety that Baczynski does, but Halep can step in and she can put a ball away.
And tactically as well, I feel Simona is very strong tactically. I mean, if you're coached by Darren Cahill, you must have really good tactics, I know. And I also wonder, because Ostapenko's record in finals is not great, that is also telling. I mean, it's telling. She's lost to Carla Suarez Navarro in Doha. She's lost to Kasatkina in Charleston. Who did she lose to in Quebec? We don't remember.
I'm racking my brain, and I know that tennis fans, the hardcores, are going to make fun of me for not remembering who it was. But yes, she did not win Quebec City.
At the end of the day, when you get into a Grand Slam final and you feel like you've never won a final before, I don't know, maybe a little bit that can factor in as well.
Most definitely. Well, we are looking forward to it. I hope it's a hot and clean day. No wind, please. There was some wind today that was affecting the earlier match. I didn't like it. I want a neutral surface. I want a good, clean fight. And I'm looking very much forward to seeing who will be the first time major champion on Saturday. Thank you very much, Reem, for joining. Yeah. Bonne soirée. Did I say it right?
Or as Corn, you like to say au revoir.
Au revoir, y'all. See you on Saturday.
See ya.
And that's a wrap on this episode of the WTA Insider Podcast. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, or on any podcast app of your choice to ensure you never miss an episode when they go live. Reviews are always helpful, so if you like what you've heard so far, please do leave us one. And you can get new episode alerts by following us on Twitter at WTA_insider, and we'll of course post the podcast on the WTA website at WTATennis.com. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon.